Hey, it's Liz Kelly, and welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. The NBA Finals are in the books, and our staff is here to guide you through the NBA draft and free agency with daily podcasts and articles on theringer.com. Also, be sure to check out Kevin O'Connor, Danny Chow, and John Gonzalez on Thursday, June 20th for our live NBA draft show on Twitter for instant reactions on every pick. And as always, be sure to listen to the Ringer NBA show for all of your offseason coverage. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, jabronis? It's pitch Mr. Perfect, Skylar Astin.
Hey, this is Bruce Pritchard.
Russ Battle Season 1 champion, Mike Lunch.
The king of sad stop.
The Silver Lake heartthrob.
It's Trey Kirby.
It's Nick Mundy.
This is your real WWE superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hey, this is WWE superstar, Braun Strowman.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I love Shinsuke Nakamura.
Zach Linder.
Dan Black, a.k.a. the Goof Haraja.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening.
You're listening.
You're listening. You're listening to. Listening to,
and you are listening to
the. You're listening.
You're listening.
Listening
to, you're listening to the Masked Man
the Masked
Show.
Man show.
The Masked 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 Man Show.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show. I'm your host, David Shoemaker. Today we have a very, very, very special appearance by the Ringer's one and only Kevin Clark. You might know him from football. Now he's going to talk about wrestling. But first, to talk all things in the professional wrestling world and to preview WWE Stomping Grounds, aka Stamping Grounds, it's Andrew Goldstein.
Hey, Shoe. What's going on, man?
How's fatherhood? Let's get this out of the way. 15 seconds on fatherhood. Go.
Let's go. Almost 8 months old. He's gigantic. He is, it's crazy. Like the development in the last 3 months. I mean, he's like army crawling. He's picking up food and eating it himself. He's holding his bottle. He's making all kinds of crazy noises. I think he said dad that a million times, but I don't know if it's, like with intent, but it sounds like he's saying it. And, he's cute AF.
I can sympathize with that a lot. I have a giant kid too. We might have a future monster tag team in the works right here.
The baby experience.
My kid is not full, has not figured out how to hold his own bottle yet, but he's trying really hard. But there's something just sort of like jerky about holding your own bottle. It's like once you can do it yourself, just start eating food. But if you're just like sitting there with a bottle in your hand, I don't know. There's something a little bit like that. I feel like that, you know, the kid's just trying to piss you off at that point. But anyway, moving on. Jim knows what I'm talking about. We got a big week of pro wrestling. We got a giant a first ever WWE pay-per-view on Sunday called Stomping Grounds. Some know it as Stamping Grounds, that some being my producer Jim. We got a lot of big stuff going on. Actually, there's two. I'm gonna just like call an audible here because there's two things that I want to talk about, and you're the perfect person to talk to these.
Ooh,
about, Andrew.
Exciting.
I'm gonna give you two prompts. This is like an AP test. I'm gonna give you two different prompts, and you can pick which one you wanna respond to.
Okay, choose your own adventure. Let's go.
All right, let's do this. Okay, number one. Well, okay, this one is maybe a little bit too easy. But number one is Seth Rollins a babyface, or I mean, is he too much of a heel right now to be a babyface? That's question number one. And then here's number two. This is a Dave Meltzer tweet.
Ooh.
Did John Cena unintentionally cause the creative black hole that WWE have by being charismatic enough to make poor material still draw ratings and house show attendances over the last decade?
Wow, hot take.
That's a real counterintuitive question there. Is everything now John Cena's fault?
Everything's always John Cena's fault, but... That's interesting. He certainly made some less than good creative material. He certainly made it better. And I think there was like a complacency from everybody else while Cena was on the roster and in the void of John Cena not on the roster. It's a lot of people trying to up the... people needing to up their game, but not really reaching it. You know, like I look at Kofi and Seth as champions coming out of WrestleMania, and both, I mean, you know, Kofi still borderline comedy act.
Yeah.
And hasn't really established himself as like, oh man, that's the world champion. And Seth Rollins has just been booked, you know, just herky, you know, it's just that raw booking. It's so up and down. And I just don't know. It's just not the best material. I think, like John Moxley said, and Dustin Rhodes said in podcasts in the last couple of months, I mean, the creative process is broken there. And so I think whoever is on top is sort of scratching and clawing to make what they're given work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. And it's just like, you know, with the amount of production, I mean, you worked for WWE in creative when that department was expanding, right? I mean, it was sort of in the process of going from a very small handful of people to the expansive, you know, units that we have today.
I was pre home and away team. I was pre like 30 member writing team. We certainly had a lot of people, but there was an organization to it. There was a workflow, and pure speculation, but it just seems just so convoluted, and they don't know. I mean, look, we had Brian, and ultimately, yes, the buck stopped with Vince, but ultimately for us day to day, the buck stopped with Brian, regardless of what brand you were on.
You're talking about Brian Gewirtz.
Brian Gewirtz, sorry. Yeah. And I don't think there's a personality like that right now for the creative team. There's Ed Koski, who I love dearly, but I just don't, and again, I'm not there, so I don't know if he's sort of looked at that way. But man, when Brian, like everything went through Brian, whether you were on Raw, SmackDown, or ECW at the time. And I just don't think there's that, like, Brian was such a creative force and had Vince's ear. I just don't know that they have that like internal liaison. I just think it's disjointed all the way up the chain getting to Vince. I think there's too many heads. There's Dave Kapoor, there's Ed Koski, there's Triple H now in the mix. So it's just I think that's all part and parcel for why the creativity why the product has suffered.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you don't have the chain of command, if you don't have somebody at the top and Vince, and it's just, you don't have to do any conspiracy theorizing to say that, like, you know, you can, Vince has a, you know, too much on his plate to be like the Brian Gewirtz and the Vince McMahon, you know, I mean, he needs somebody in that role.
They need a Sean Fennessy for sure.
They can have Sean Fennessy. I hate that guy. Just send him on. No, you said Sean Fennessy is invaluable to what we do. And, you know, and it's all these jobs are big jobs, you know, I mean, they're all like, everything's bigger than coming up with ideas for what wrestlers should do on TV. Even that was Gewirtz's job was way bigger than that back in the day, you know, and all the creative people have too much to do to spend time running around trying to get the things they've already decided on approved and rewritten and everything else. Anyway. I mean, did you have any other reactions to the Rhodes or John Moxley podcast as someone who's been on the inside that you felt hit home or
You know, it was so funny, like listening to the Moxley podcast, and I've been on countless podcasts since 2006 and always asked the question of like, why, you know, about what the flaws in the system. And I've gone on and on about talking about it, but I thought John Moxley put it the best of anybody, any former writer, any former wrestler who has talked about that issue. I thought he put it the best when he just said, he was like, bottom line, the creative process is broken, fix it. Or no, he said, the creative process sucks, fix it. And I was just like, yeah, that in and of itself, that in five words, whatever it is, that's it. It just, the creative process there stinks. There's no way around it. You can't defend that it's actually good, and they need to fix it. And I think now that Moxley opened that door, you see Dustin Rhodes saying it, you see Ty Dillinger saying it in a nicer way. And I think you're going to continue to hear these critiques from anybody that they let, you know, out the door. And you hear it from Chris Jericho, who has been the biggest WWE apologist, you know, not as a knock, but he just has been a company guy, said he'd never worked for another company. And here he is as like the crown jewel of AEW. And he's confirming everything that Moxley said. So they have a big problem on their hands, especially going into SmackDown, moving to Fox. This is the big leagues for sure for them. This is their biggest media move. This is their biggest move ever in the history of the company in terms of where their product is going to be seen. And right now their creative is not matching the level of a move to a network. And they really have a problem on their hands.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, with AEW, I mean, I think AEW is going to have some growing pains might not be the right word, but they're going to have their own set of issues trying to figure out how to do
live weekly television.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. There's a big chasm between running two really successful functional pay-per-view shows and doing 2 hours a week live. You know, I mean, it's really easy to fall into, it's really easy to fall into just some bad, unhealthy patterns and that just drag the whole thing down. You know, I mean, just to fill time.
By the way, Growing Pains would be a great name for a WWE pay-per-view right now.
WWE, they can get Kurt Cameron there. I'm sure that he's available.
Yeah. Oh my God. He'd be like Brother Love.
But speaking of creative freedom, there was an interesting thing. I think Sean Ross Sapp over at Fightful tweeted that, that the 24/7 the wrestlers involved in the 24/7 title picture have complete creative freedom, or at least they're being encouraged to suggest creative ideas and everything that's going on there that's always fun and funny and just a good kind of a breath of fresh air whenever those gimmicks pop up, at least so far that's really fun and refreshing. And then someone on Reddit responded to that and pointed out, hey, Bray Wyatt gets freedom. We get the Firefly Funhouse. It's awesome, right? The New Day gets freedom. They turn themselves into the biggest act in the company, probably. NXT, I don't know if that's creative freedom, but it certainly there's more of the wrestlers themselves involved in the development of the characters. And then we see just like the mainstream WWE, everything else that's on Raw, and it's just sort of like just monotonous.
Well, this has been beaten to death, but once again, the top of the card is what Vince cares about. And that's what he spends most of his time nitpicking and sort of overthinking. And it's the bottom of the card. It's the sort of mid card to lower where people actually do have some freedom to like get some things over because Vince isn't paying as much attention. And sad to say right now, Big E and Xavier, the New Day are kind of are an exception, but the 24/7 title and some other fun things going on with the product are kind of outside of Vince's purview right now. So like the 24/7 title, it started out kind of hokey and cheesy and like, derivative of the hardcore title, but week to week, they've done some really fun things with it, especially, shout out to R-Truth, who's been great. And, like the web exclusives of like the pin at the airport and the pin on the golf course. That's all really fun stuff, whether you like the production values or not, or whether what's his name shows up in his gear at the golf course. Which was totally like, why is he wearing his gear? Yeah. But otherwise, these are nitpicky things. It's been really fun. And it just shows you like R-Truth is just, such an MVP at this point.
Well, and it's like you give somebody, I think it's just a small thing, but it's a valid point. R-Truth teaming up with The Miz on Tuesday night to reunite the Awesome Truth, but just becoming his sort of like random tag team partner. That could have happened anyway, but it basically wouldn't have. My guess is it probably wouldn't have been. It wouldn't have happened if R-Truth hadn't had the 24/7 title to sort of make himself relevant again, right?
And I think the crowd would have like rolled their eyes maybe a little bit at like, oh, okay, whatever, like kind of fun. The Awesome Truth is back together, but like we know that R-Truth is kind of like a quote unquote jobber right now. But now that he's like this fun 24/7 guy that we're seeing all over our TV, it kind of means something now that he gets put in this big match. Like, we get it.
Absolutely true. All right. We got to talk about WWE Stomping Grounds. We got to run through this card.
Let's go.
there's a lot of big stuff. I mean, for all of the kind of monotony that I'll complain about and malaise and everything, there's a lot of fun stuff going on at WWE, and they can put together a pay-per-view card that on paper, I mean, month to month, it just looks like insanely cool. It just, you know, we'll see what comes out of it. So let's go through this. I'm going to go in reverse Wikipedia order. Or actually, no, that's a weird order. I'm just going to go in a random order of my own choosing, and we'll do picks and talk about these matches. Number one, do you pay attention to the 205 Live, or should I just skip the Tony Nese, Akira Tozawa, and Drew Gulak match?
Shout out to Tony Nese. Good for him. He's got to be thrilled with his position. Akira Tozawa's fun. They're all fun. It's going to be fun. It's going to open the show probably on the pre-show. Who wins, who loses? I don't know if anybody's really hanging on that match to on what the outcome's going to be. I think it's just going to be really, really fun.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, 205 Live, I was talking about it last week, and it was you know, super fun.
Chad Gable's drop down to 205 Live was awesome.
Well, I think that Sunday's match, regardless of who wins, is just setting the stage for Chad Gable's eventual ascension. If they have the constitution to leave him on that show, if they're really gonna go through with that, then he's gonna be the face of it, because he's fantastic, and he, you know, he has that vibe of like a lower weight class MMA fighter or you know, wrestler, which he is, obviously, that he feels totally legitimate. You can't look at him and not notice that he's like 5'8", you know, or whatever, but he feels like totally legitimate. He feels like a beast for his size, and he can kind of be, you know, the Lesnar of that division, and that will help bring it some legitimacy, I hope. I mean, I think that's certainly what they're going for.
It's a smart move.
Yeah, my guess is that if I had to pick for this match, I'm going to pick Drew Gulak just because I think he'd be the better foil for Gable, but it could go in any direction. It's 205 Live, and like I said, it's been a lot of fun lately. All right, next match. Let's do Bayley versus Alexa Bliss for the SmackDown Women's Championship.
Alexa Bliss's partnership with Nikki Cross has been actually really fun, and they're sort of brawl at Raw or on SmackDown was really fun leading into the match. But I think Bayley's kind of getting over with that title, and I wouldn't be too quick to take that title off of her. I think there's a lot they can still do with Bayley now that the like Sasha Banks stuff has kind of receded, and she's kind of on her own two feet as this champion. And I especially with so many other female wrestlers getting over, I think there's a lot you can do with the wild card rule with Bayley as champion.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the wild card rule is, I mean, the existence of this match is thanks to the wild card rule. And I think that on the men's side, the wild card rule has been a problem for a lot of reasons, although there's been some fun aspects to it. But on the women's side, I think it does open up a lot of opportunities and a lot of possibilities that, you know, I mean, the biggest problem with the women's division and on the brand split is that there's not enough different combinations, you know, and the wild card rule sort of solves that.
I think Alexa Bliss has proven with Moment of Bliss that she doesn't need the title to get over or to get screen time or to be meaningful. And I just don't think she needs the title. Like, I don't think they need to make a title change here. I think they could certainly, Bayley can go over. There can be a schmoz with Nikki Cross, whatever. And it doesn't do any harm to Alexa Bliss for her to lose to Bayley or for the match to end in, you know, ridiculous circumstances. But I would keep the title on Bayley. I think there's so much more that she can do as champion than if you just put the title on Alexa Bliss, which we've seen already.
We have seen it. Although I'm not opposed to Alexa Bliss I'm not opposed to them swapping the title a couple times. I think that there's a chance that could elevate both of them. But you know, I take to your point. My pick is Alexa Bliss.
Disagree.
Your pick is Bayley.
Yeah, let's go. I'm going with Bayley.
All right, let's move on. Samoa Joe, our U.S. champion, is taking on Ricochet, who won the right to face them in a big fatal five-way match on Monday Night Raw against a lot of good wrestlers. This is a big leap for Ricochet. I mean, after his debut, it seemed like he was getting reactions that would insinuate him at the upper mid card, but he's been a little bit of a ghost since he split up with Aleister Black, and they ended up on different shows. What do you think? What do you think, who do you think is going to win this match? Obviously, but more importantly, what do you think Ricochet's ceiling is right now?
This has been fun. First of all, mid card titles like this, this is how it should be. It should be an open field for who their next opponent's going to be, unless it's a rubber match kind of, you know, storyline that they're telling. So I really like the Fatal 5-Way leading to who Samoa Joe's opponent's going to be. Samoa Joe asserting his dominance over Rey Mysterio. So, you know, he means something as champion. Ricochet, I don't like the way he's been booked. I don't care that he lost a couple of the matches to Cesaro. What I care about is that in a couple of the promos, he kind of sold himself short. He kind of said, he was saying things like, I know I'm not the biggest, I know I'm not the strongest, but, and I just don't understand why they would write a guy like Ricochet like that and make him sell himself short when he has so many of these other amazing attributes. Like, blow him up, make him seem bigger than just this like 5'9" guy, you know, help him, give him some help. I think the promos have not done him any justice, have done him a disservice. That said, I was psyched that he won the Fatal 5-Way. I thought it was a great decision. We saw that he can hang with people bigger than him with the sort of, you know, what was it? 4 matches, 5 matches with Cesaro, which were wonderful. So Ricochet, Samoa Joe, I mean, this can go two or three pay-per-views. I think Samoa Joe will win, but I think Ricochet will look incredible in the match, and I think it will lead to a rubber match and possibly Ricochet going over in a future match. But I'm picking Samoa Joe here, and I really think they need to work on the tone of Ricochet's promos.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I don't know that he even needs to talk. I mean, so much, but obviously they're going to make him talk. And for someone with, you know, as much upside and the look that he has, I mean, it's WWE has a thing where I've talked about it before. It's like, if anybody gets to like, you know, BB plus status, then like immediately Vince is like, Vince wants him to be The Rock. You know, it's just like, put the microphone in their hand. Let's make them funny, make them charismatic. Like, let's see what they got. And it's like, well, some people are just better off doing, you know, 640 flips in the ring and letting that speak for them, you know. But anyway,
I just don't think they need to paint him as any kind of underdog. Like, to me, that's the complete wrong direction for how you want to paint Ricochet. He should be like this, like superhero. Like, you'd never hear a superhero talking about how I'm smaller than and I'm weaker than my opponent.
No, absolutely not. I mean, and especially against someone like especially like someone like Samoa Joe, who's going to make him look like $1 million. It seems like an unnecessary beat to hit.
So that bothered me, but I think Samoa Joe goes over here, but I think eventually we could see a Ricochet win down the road. Cause I think these guys could, obviously it's going to be 5-star every time they step in the ring. So it would behoove WWE to make this like a storyline going forward, 2, 3, 4 matches.
Well, Samoa Joe so far, I mean, for the past while, has been sort of the king of the rubber match. I mean, every feud he has seems to last about 4 months. But but I don't know that that's a reason to not do it here. I mean, it's easy to say elevate Samoa Joe, elevate the title, whatever. But I do think that the Ricochet, I mean, Samoa Joe is sort of Teflon. And I don't want to take it for granted that a heel can eat a bunch of losses and it not hurt them. That's not always true. But I do feel like the Ricochet project at this point is the more important aspect of this feud. So they have to make him look really viable.
Yeah, what they can't do is a squash. They could, if you know, and again, that sounds ridiculous. Like, why would you ever have Samoa Joe squash Ricochet? But I can't put anything past the creative right now. And that's like the one thing they cannot do. They can put Ricochet over, they can put Samoa Joe over, but if they do that, Ricochet has to look like $1 million.
Yeah, I agree with that. So what's your pick for this? Is Samoa Joe?
Samoa Joe.
I'm going to be just contrary and go with Ricochet, anything could happen here.
Absolutely.
Let's see, what's next? Daniel Bryan and Rowan, your SmackDown Tag Team Champions versus Heavy Machinery. Otis and Tucker, two big fun-loving dudes.
Yeah. Well, like the heavy machinery comedy kind of fell flat, and luckily they've been moving away from that in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, here they are in the tag team championship match against Dan O'Brien and Rowan, which is pretty huge for heavy machinery. I'm glad they've gone away from the comedy and the sort of like want, you know, heavy breathing of of Otis. Yes. And like the embarrassing him and don't get him mad, because when he gets mad, like that whole, you know, Festus type storyline, I'm glad they've kind of moved away from that. I'm a big heavy machinery fan. I think Otis is there's so much you can do with Otis if you break him off and make him a single eventually. Yeah.
I'm actually worried about that, because I feel like that's another one that's just like, it feels almost too obvious. I think that if he's a single, first of all, Tucker will be wrestling an Impact in about 15 minutes. I mean, they're not going to try to repackage Tucker, is my
guess.
There's
no money in Tucker.
And Otis is, I think there's money in him. I think that you're right. I don't know really what the ceiling is. Although maybe there doesn't need to be a ceiling. Maybe he's just a Rikishi type that is just like a huge crowd pop on the mid card, and then one night they'll give him a title match against whoever the Triple H of the era is, and people will just go absolutely apeshit for him to lose. You know, I mean, for in hopes that he'll win, but he'll inevitably lose. I mean, maybe that's a career to aspire to. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to dog it.
He's like Bill DeMott without the go away heat.
Oh, we'll just leave it at that. So, what is your pick?
I enjoy Daniel Bryan and Rowan a lot. I think, like I said, R-Truth has been the MVP. I think 1A has been Daniel Bryan. I think he is clicking on all cylinders, from his promos to the character to obviously his ring work and making Rowan look like, you know, the whole combination has just been fantastic. I like putting the tag team titles on them as a sort of way to like keep Daniel Bryan important, but not in the main event picture. I think the titles will stay on. I know I'm picking all title retention here, but I don't see that heavy machinery is, I just don't see the titles going on heavy machinery yet. I don't think they're over to the point of putting the titles on them. I think Daniel Bryan and Rowan retain, because there's a lot more sort of main event, mid card main event adjacent work for Daniel Bryan and Rowan to do with the titles.
They can get in the ring and cut kind of headliner promos with those tag team belts in their arms in a way that no other teams can. And I think we're leaning a lot on the meta reasoning behind who's going to win these matches, I feel like, in this preview. But there, you know, you can make the case that heavy machinery win will sort of legitimize the tag team division on SmackDown a little bit, but I think that you're right. I think Daniel Bryan and Rowan, I think that there's no legitimacy without a more vital division. And Daniel and Bryan and Rowan can retain, and they can get the New Day into the mix, you know, for the tag belts. They can, maybe Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn
will end up. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, exactly.
They can do that. And I think that there are a lot of potential tag teams that aren't, you know, conventional tag teams over there that can do it. And then also we saw the AOP was hanging out on SmackDown this week. So maybe they'll be around soon, you know, to do some of that soon too.
I'm pretty sure on Raw there was a little couple second, you know, ships crossing in the night on the ramp between Daniel Bryan and Rowan and the Viking Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would love to see that match.
Yeah, I think that the who was it? I think Lance Storm tweeted this week that they just need to unify all the titles and just make the champions the permanent wild cards to simplify everything. And I don't think that WWE would ever do anything so obvious, but there is a lot of logic behind unifying the tag belts and maybe even, you know, some of the other belts too. But I mean, there's just so many fun tag matches once you kind of blow it open that you could look forward to. Okay. Daniel Bryan and Rowan, both of our picks. The next, just mention both these teams. The New Day, Big E and Xavier Woods version versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in a straight-up tag team match. There's a lot of backstory to this, but
I'll just be quick. I think Owens and Zayn get their heat back. They've been made to sort of look like fools the last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. But I think they get their heat back at the pay-per-view. I don't think Xavier Woods and Big E need the win here. And if you want to extend the story, I think Owens and Zayn need to get their heat back. So I think that happens in this match.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that there's always going to be an opportunity for a New Day winning the tag belts and sort of having a big, we, you know, New Day has a bunch of the titles moment, but that's obviously, there's no tag belts on the line here. So I think you're right. Yeah. I'm going to go
that's
with Owens and Zayn too.
That's more of a heel thing.
You're right.
It's like a faction having all the titles. I don't think that buys babyfaces really anything, but it's an interesting way to go if they wanted to do that. But I just think it's, they need Kevin Owens and Zayn to win. Otherwise it's like, what are they doing with these guys? They're much fun. They're great talkers.
Yeah, they are.
And great protagonists.
Yeah, they are. Technically, they're on separate shows, which I guess would be the only argument against. Yeah. But right, who cares? Right, right. It's the wild card era.
Who cares? It means nothing at this point.
No, absolutely not. Okay, next up, Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre in the continuation of the Shane McMahon is our top heel storyline.
Yeah, okay. I have a couple things here. Drew McIntyre, they are trying so hard to get him over. Since he debuted on the main roster, we talked about this the last time I was on your show, they have put him with every possible iteration, combination of monster heels or, you know, mid to main event heels. Now he's sort of the heater for Shane McMahon, which I actually is probably his best role since coming back to the main roster. What needs work is when they put him in casual clothes, they got to get rid of the like electric blue V-neck and the dad leather jacket. Like somebody's got to style this dude a little bit better. He just doesn't look like Diesel, you know, like the Diesel was cool. Drew McIntyre in plain clothes doesn't look cool. He just looks like a board op at a post-production facility, you know? So like that hurts Drew in my eyes. Not that his duster helps him at all either when he's wrestling, but I do like Drew a lot. But I think Drew has sort of owned Reigns sort of in the build up to this match, and I don't think there's any scenario in which Roman Reigns is losing in a big pay-per-view match anytime soon.
Yeah, I do think that there's always been a tension between the quote unquote pro wrestler look and regular human being clothes. It's very, very, very seldom that you get somebody like Roman Reigns that's got like the size along with the long hair that can just sort of like strut out into public in some street clothes and look okay. That is the biggest compliment I will pay Roman Reigns probably for a while. He looks fantastic in street clothes.
These are the things that I get hung up on.
No, but I totally agree. I totally agree. But Drew McIntyre is like a throwback in a lot of ways, even though he's sort of a generational sort of transformative talent in the ring at times. I agree with that. Listen, my question with Drew McIntyre is I think that you're totally right. They keep trying to get him over in the sense that they keep positioning him as sort of like one notch below the top of the card. And they're just like begging the crowd to latch onto him somehow. But if they're so determined to get him over, why are they doing that and not just putting him at the top of the card? You know, like why have they learned the Roman Reigns lesson just right now when it pertains to Drew McIntyre, but not in other instances? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's go number two or get off the pot with Drew. It's like he's there, he's big, he's a monster. His offense is pretty devastating. He looks the part for the most part, but they're just like the slowest trigger finger. It's Braun Strowman syndrome all over again. It's like everybody sees where this guy should be going, and yet they're very slow to pull the trigger. Obviously, lots of mistakes with Braun Strowman. Drew McIntyre on the heel side. The next thing is like they're going to inextricably turn him babyface for some reason. But as of right now, I mean, he has been like the butt kicker. He was particularly brutal to his old 3-man bandmate on Raw.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I thought that was a really effective promo, and then really funny by the Revival came in and like started pocketing the cash. I thought was really funny. Yeah. That like did it for me. But I think Roman goes over here. They haven't done Roman. I think this like treading water for Roman is a new position for him. And obviously coming back from what he's come back from is like, I kind of get like, okay, we're going to ease him in. You know, we're not going to throw him right back in the title picture. So like, I get where this is going. It's a hard one to predict just because I think they have to keep the steam on Drew. Like they can't really have him lose, but losing to Roman isn't that bad of a thing. But then it's like, will there be, there'll probably be some sort of interference with Shane McMahon and whomever else. So
Elias,
I'm a little torn here. I'm a little torn on where to go. So I just lean Roman just because that's the WWE way.
Yeah, I think I'm right in the middle on this. I think I'm leaning towards Roman, but I do think that, you know, a McIntyre win. I feel like Drew's going to win. I'm going to say Drew's going to win only because Shane, they can't keep having Shane wrestle every month or even every other month. I think the most important thing is to not make this match look like an afterthought or look like a space filler before you get back to Roman Reigns versus Shane. And so I think that giving Drew some heat by winning, I mean, obviously they could do that with a post-match beatdown or anything else, but I'm going to pick Drew. But I agree with everything that you said. It's going to be, you know, it is wild that Shane McMahon is as central a part of TV as he is. Is it not?
Yeah, I mean, between Baron Corbin and Shane McMahon's screen time and like match, you know, booking, I'm incredulous.
I kind of wish they would just combine it all. I mean, I was looking at this card and I'm just like, if nobody cares about Seth Rollins versus Baron Corbin to the degree that they should be caring about the Universal Championship match.
Yeah, they're working really hard to get this special guest referee thing over, and it's going to be a dud, whoever it is. I'm sitting here trying to think of, you know, who he hasn't beaten down with a chair. I actually got kind of excited when it was EC3, and then obviously that went to crap, but, you know, I don't see them putting the title on Baron Corbin anytime soon. Baron Corbin, when he loses to people, it doesn't hurt his character. People hate him regardless. And he does a fine job in that role. Seth Rollins is my pick versus Baron Corbin.
I kind of think they should just throw Baron Corbin in with the Shane McMahon mafia and just have like a really like the Ministry of Darkness of like X-Pac heat and just go all in with it and have him on both shows.
Shane would be aligned with the two worst dressed big men in the company.
That's fantastic. And by the way, the only way the special guest referee is going to be a letdown. The only two options that are interesting would be Roman Reigns and Becky Lynch. That would be the only two. If one of those came out aligned with Baron Corbin, I would pop. Otherwise, I think I'm going to shrug my shoulders.
Becky would be fun. It'll probably be something stupid like Shane McMahon.
Or they could just
Bray Wyatt.
Or Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Can they have Brock Lesnar come out and work the match and then beat up Seth Rollins and take the belt afterwards? I mean, that would be, we'll see where it goes on the card.
You know, they kind of teased that because Heyman was like, Heyman was saying like, don't pick me. I don't want to get beat up.
Yeah.
I could see it being Brock Lesnar like, oh my God, holy crap.
He would be the highest paid referee in wrestling history. That would be a really important moment. All right. My pick for that match is Seth Rollins.
Besides Mike Tyson.
What else do we have to hit?
I have a real quick question with that Brock Lesnar. Could he be the referee and cash in his Money in the Bank and then count himself?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be a fantastic bit.
That'd be amazing.
Do it.
There you go.
I think we've landed on who the special referee is going to be.
Done. Last match is Kofi versus Dolph in a steel cage. What's your pick?
They're not putting any kind of title on Dolph Ziggler. I think the title stays on Kofi Kingston. It was too big of a moment at WrestleMania, even though since he won the title, he hasn't done much of anything. He's been a comedy act, which drives me crazy. On SmackDown, his entrance, literally there was nobody in the crowd making noise. So I feel really bad because I want this Kofi thing to work. That said, I just don't think that. I think Dolph Ziggler is a placeholder right now until a bigger pay-per-view and for a bigger program with Kofi. So I say Kofi over. I know I've switched like no titles, which probably isn't going to happen. But those are, you know, that's how I kind of come at things from a logical booking perspective, I like to think. And so obviously I'm going to be at odds with how WWE does things. But I can't see Dolph Ziggler walking away with the title here.
Neither can I. My pick's Kofi Kingston as well. Listen, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. Do you want to plug anything on the way out the door?
No, just Twitter at Ange Gold on Twitter, AngeGold. Thank you as always for having me. Sorry if I was a little bit rushed and a little absent-minded, but always a pleasure, Dave. And shout out to Jim Cunningham and everybody at The Ringer. Enjoy NBA draft night.
Oh God, I definitely will. And you do too, man. I will talk to you soon.
Peace.
All right. Thanks again to the great Andrew Goldstein. Next coming up, as we discuss, is a very special appearance by a very special Ringer staffer. I am joined now by a man of mystery from the Los Angeles studio. This is the Ringer's own Kevin Clark. Now, a little preamble. You may know him as our NFL football writer, but this week he's our professional wrestling correspondent. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to make this debut. Is this called a run-in? What do we call a debut here on The Masked Man?
This is officially a cross promotional run-in where you appear with we'll play the NFL on Fox theme song, and then you're
I appear on the balcony, just chugging your beer like the Sandman.
Yes, I just know I want you sitting like second row, and it's just like, wait, what is Kevin doing here? Yeah. Hey, well, he bought a ticket.
He's Clark's raising hell. Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Raising hell as always. Now, listen, you alerted me to the fact that I don't remember what order I found this out in, but I registered that you told me you were going to Monday Night Raw this week at Staples Center, which is great. And then I think at that point I found out that you had already been to a lucha show, a CMLL show in Mexico City earlier in the week.
Let's back up here. I had not been to a wrestling event in a decade. I don't really watch wrestling. I was absolutely obsessed during the Attitude Era. And I don't mean like I was one of these kids who watched SmackDown and Raw. I mean, I was scouring every message board I could, reading all those sort of early internet wrestling columns, like that sort of thing. But I don't really follow it anymore. But I went to Mexico City with my wife, and we wanted to take in some of the sporting culture there. And we went to Arena Mexico on Friday night. It was amazing. It was awesome. We can get into that. And then get back to the States. Got a little bit sick after Mexico, actually. Needed to get out of the house. Friend of mine had a bunch of tickets to Raw. Call me up, and I was it is alarming to get a short notice Raw invite, especially when you don't know what's in town. But I just probably said yes before I could think about it, and I was in. And
it's also a little bit alarming because it's I always point this out, this coastal thing. It's also alarming because you get a text message and they're like, can you be at Staples Center at 4:30?
Yeah, that was my thing. Well, I was like, yes, absolutely, I'll be there at 8:00, and they're like, it starts at 4:30. What? Yeah, the coastal thing is very strange.
Yeah. So anyway, you experienced two, I wouldn't say they're the polar opposite aspects of professional wrestling, but two very different pro wrestling shows in the span of a week.
So let's unpack the lucha first. First of all.
Okay, let's do that. And then we'll get to Monday Night Raw, because we're going to get there anyway.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to very quickly delve into this. So first of all, the area, it's because they have the show in the same place once a week, I guess, or twice a week. The whole infrastructure around it is wrestling. I've never really seen anything like it. Like, in the same way, if you're around Wrigley Field, you know, you get a couple blocks away and all the bars are baseball and the street vendors are baseball and they're selling baseball stuff. Arena Mexico is like that, but wrestling. And lucha, obviously, specifically. And so you get a couple blocks away and it's all people going to the wrestling. The street vendors, I mean, there's so many street vendors selling different types of masks. Some of them are mass produced. Some of them are just, you know, people make it on their own. Different like ring art. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Kind of like ring, like miniature art rings or rings, but then there's like paintings inside of it. Like, it was really...
Okay, I'm all about it.
It was
sounds
a
great.
Really interesting scene. And then obviously the street food and all that. Like, you could have... It's lucha heaven if you're into that. And then we went inside. It's one of the things about lucha libre, if you're an American or anyone who doesn't speak Spanish, is that you will just be constantly confused, and that's okay. Because first of all, there's just 8 people in the ring at all times, and I don't understand it. And you can sort of figure out. So one of the matches was a 6-way match featuring one team was Blue Panther. Blue Panther Jr. and then Blue Panther Jr.'s brother, Black Panther. So it's I can kind of figure this out what this is. But then like some of the matches would be single eliminate, like 4-on-4, and then one guy gets eliminated after the pin. Some of it would be team stuff. Some of it would be 2 out of 3 falls. But because they would announce it, I would have no idea. We had no idea where to cheer. We just had some beers and had a great time.
Yeah, no, I've never been to Mexico City, and never seen a lucha card live. Big hole in my wrestling fandom, but I do stumble. I say stumble. I do deliberately stumble across CMLL. I mean, just Mexican wrestling on cable television, probably more often than I'd like to admit. And yeah, I'm just constantly confused. But it's great. It's fantastic.
It's great. And I was also surprised. I mean, obviously Mexico City is a huge place, but it's probably 75% full for a venue that hosts the same federation twice a week. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm looking at the card right now. It looks like the main event, or at least the last match, was featured Rush, who has some indie cred right now in the U.S. But
he's the son of the guy he was teammates with,
La Bestia del Rey.
Yeah, which is a pretty easy translation.
Yes, I love those. And then they wrestled twice. It looks like at the end, or was there some sort of like tag team tournament going on?
Yeah, kind of. And we'll also Flyer was in two of the last three matches as well, who I think is a popular guy. The other thing is we took a wrong turn when we were leaving, and and we ended up in the Lucha parking lot, and they all wear their masks in the parking lot. Like I don't know why. That was my question. Do they wear it when they're driving, or do they wait until they get off the premises to take their mask off? I was very curious about that.
The luchadors themselves or the fans?
No, the luchadors.
The luchadors don't ever take their masks off.
Well, I mean, they do at home.
Shower.
I'm saying we ended up in a place we weren't supposed to be in accidentally, and then they were all wearing their masks, like getting into the car. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they take that very seriously.
Oh, I'm well aware now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, if you go to a show in the States, especially a big show, where there's lots of various people hanging around, it doesn't take too much work to like find the bar the wrestlers are hanging out at after the show. It's not as crazy as it was in the 80s or anything, but like you can go to like the hotel restaurant and see Kane with no costume on, just like having dinner with his kids. Like that's not too difficult a thing to do.
Right.
But in Mexico, they're wearing a mask. Yeah, in Mexico, they get buried with their masks on.
Yeah, the Blue Panther and Blue Panther Jr. dinner, everyone's masks.
That's great. Everybody's like eating through straws. It's just like dense smoothie dinners. But overall, it was a great time.
I had a much better time at Lucha than the WWE a week later.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Okay, so then you end up in am I correct in thinking you were in a box seat? I mean, a fancy box seat at the Staples Center to watch Monday Night Raw.
That's correct. The open bar helped.
Yeah, I've done that a few times, and it's actually. I mean, Staples is a great arena. So I mean, sometimes you get in these boxes and you feel like you're a million miles away. It can be a pretty fun time from up there.
I do think wrestling, there is something to be said for just being in the thick of it and chanting or whatever. I was not, because I was coming off an illness. I wasn't exactly jazzed to do that, but under normal circumstances. Being closer and just being, chanting for, if I knew like to yell for Seth Rollins, the burn it down thing, if I knew that before I heard it for the first time, I would have done it if I was in the thick of it,
Sure. All right. So you saw Seth Rollins, you saw some of the greats, and you haven't watched wrestling, like you said.
I saw some of the greats. Yeah.
In a couple of decades,
So I went to, it's actually quite funny. So obviously you cannot compare the Attitude Era to what's going on now. But I also went 10 years ago, 2009, there was a Raw in Orlando. I was actually at a Raw that is the highest rated Raw, I think, ever. I don't know if the Attitude Era were higher ratings than like a couple years ago, but I do know that the highest rated Raw of the Attitude Era was in Orlando in 1999. And I was just like, if you look at the list, it was an unbelievable card and it was awesome. But so I went in 2009, I was in college. I just, some friends had tickets and I went. And so that was more what I compared that to. But I don't really know much about. I know when those guys crossed over to the mainstreams. Like I knew who Becky Lynch was. I knew Daniel Bryan was. And I also feel like, the Daniel Bryan heel turn to me seemed very strange because I don't feel like anybody wanted to see him get beat up. Is that weird?
Well, yeah, I mean, for a couple of different reasons. One, because we love him, and two, because, he gets beat up as a face. You're just not exuberant about it.
The angle there, as I'm sure you watched on Monday, was like, so there were some run-ins between the match between Rollins and Bryan, and there were some run-ins, and then everybody came from the back to make sure it was just one-on-one, Rollins versus Bryan. And I just don't feel like people wanted that. I don't know. I just feel like there was sort of a... an apathy when it was Rollins versus Bryan, because I don't think there's much heat on Bryan.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, I think that more than anything, it probably had to do with the fact that despite that this is sort of a dream match, I mean, not a super duper dream match, but Rollins versus Bryan could be a WrestleMania main event.
Okay.
And that they were doing it on Raw in a sort of bald-faced attempt to goose ratings. But no one believed for a second that anything was going to that Brian was going to win or that anything significant was going to come out of it. So it's like a dream match with such a preordained finish that it's even more boring than if it had been Seth Rollins, or more, there's more apathy engendered than if it had been Seth Rollins versus somebody on the roster who you know, was less meaningful than Daniel.
I'm only going off the crowd reaction. That's all I have to go off of. And it just seemed like I'm with you. When I saw that the main event, I was like, well, that's quite a good, it actually wasn't the main event because Becky Lynch was afterwards. But when I saw that on the card, I was like, wow, that's really good. But then the crowd, it just seemed to have no reaction to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of where we are right now.
I was surprised at sort of the inconsistency in the crowd. Here's my question for you is, because of the 4:30 start time, are West Coast crowds sort of notoriously sleepy? I mean, presumably there's less time to get there. There's less time, as we know from all sports, less time to get alcohol in your system and get extremely loud. It just seems like there'd be a natural inclination for West Coast crowds to be a little quieter.
I mean, I don't know if alcohol is as much of a going concern as it would have been at like a, you know, like a Georgia show in the 80s or something like that. But
at the Omni?
Yeah. But I can only speak from personal experience. And it definitely, like, I'm not, like, when I go to a pay-per-view or if I go to Monday Night Raw here in Brooklyn or something like that, then yeah, I'm pretty amped up by the time the bell rings. But in LA, you're kind of like, you're so rushing to get there that it takes an hour for you to kind of settle in. But I mean, I don't know if that's, you know, always the case in the West Coast. It's LA's kind of an interesting crowd. I mean, they can get really, really into big shows and big matches, and one of the best crowds sometimes can be one of the best crowds in the country. But just like with pro sports or whatever, you know, there's a little bit of you gotta kind of work for it. They can be a little bit dismissive at times too, or a little bit just bored. But so yeah. So anyway, do you have any more questions for me? This being your first experience, who was that guy?
No,
sort of question.
So there were a couple things I have questions on. So
please.
What do WWE crowds? What is just a guaranteed pop now? Because it seemed to me that, and maybe this was just an extremely specific group on an extremely specific Monday, but it seemed to me that the only people the crowd legitimately popped for were the Usos.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know who they were before this started, but is that normal where there's just not even it even seemed like with Becky Lynch, like, again, I know who she is because she's crossed over in the mainstream, but it seemed like even she was having trouble just getting the types of pops that would be fairly routine in normal sort of eras of WWE.
Yeah, I mean, Becky Lynch has certainly lost some steam, and part of that's just the weight of expectations and people like me saying that she's the next Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it never, you know, if that doesn't materialize, then there's a little bit of an exhale.
Well, also, I don't know if she had, like, she was fighting I was going to call her the Southern Belle. I mean, whatever, that's her shtick, right? Mm-hmm. But she didn't get much reaction at all either. And so it's like, if you don't, the thing with Stone Cold is he had a lot of worthy adversaries. And now that Ronda, I guess, is out of the picture, I don't know, you know, how you make Becky into Stone Cold.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of converse of that is that Stone Cold actually benefited at times from having a lack of worthy adversaries, and that's how Vince McMahon ended up standing in the ring across from him all the time.
Right.
There weren't that many people, and you kind of had to, like, work with what you had, and wrestling and WWE in particular is always better when they're kind of out of options. and this is one of those where, I mean, we saw it with Daniel Bryan when he won at WrestleMania 30, and then he got hurt, but his first feud after his enormous WrestleMania win was against Kane, which was just kind of a nowhere feud. And it seems sort of like, even though they messed around with Charlotte and Flair and some other people for Becky Lynch, that Lacey Evans has a little bit of that vibe where they just immediately kind of put you in a placeholder feud. I don't know if they're just trying to tread water until SummerSlam already or what, but this feud certainly doesn't have, I mean, listen, it's a pro wrestling feud. It is two people who are playing combatants who are mad at each other because they're feuding over a belt and because one's been an asshole to the other one. I mean, it is a story. And what made Becky Lynch leading up to WrestleMania such a big thing is that it was more than a story, that it was like the real life journey of someone who, like, forced their way into the main event at WrestleMania. That was what made it pop. And it's just impossible to really live up to that. Same thing with Daniel Bryan back in the day. So, okay, do you have more questions?
Yeah. Explain this Brock Lesnar thing to me. because Paul Heyman showed up and then hinted that Lesnar was there, and then Lesnar just never showed up. Is he just sort of going to be, I know he was on camera a couple weeks ago. I just saw that on Twitter at one point, but is he just sort of going to be hinted at for a while and then show up every couple of weeks or months?
Yes. I mean, I think the short answer is yes. He has the Money in the Bank briefcase, which means he can cash. He won a match, but he entered himself into a match at the very end, claimed this mystical briefcase from the, he climbed a ladder, pulled a briefcase out of the sky. The winner of the match who gets the briefcase can trade that in for a title shot at any point they want. So after, if Seth Rollins has a match and he gets totally destroyed by his opponent, and he's lying there, he barely wins, but he's still the champ and he's lying there in pain, Brock Lesnar can come out, cash in the briefcase and fight Seth Rollins right there and beat him in 5 seconds. Like that's what he gets. So not only is Brock Lesnar in general this like otherworldly specter looming over the main event scene in WWE with or without the briefcase, now he has this briefcase, so that's like his storyline purpose as well, that he may appear at any moment and reclaim the championship, which is both a great ominous heel, you know, bad guy thing to be, I mean, position to be in, but also fans are generally bored of him, and so it's a very heelish thing for him to constantly be threatening to come back at any moment and to reclaim the championship. So to answer your question succinctly, Brock Lesnar gets paid per appearance or has a certain number of appearances written into his gigantic contract, and they don't use him every time, I mean, on every Monday Night Raw. So they just send Paul Heyman out to be his manager and to speak for him and to sort of keep him in the, you know, front of the mind until he shows up, you know, and gets $1 million to like hit somebody with a chair in 4 weeks.
So just to separate, is there a way that the WWE just, the fans just reject him so thoroughly that we get Lesnar, Daniel Cormier in the UFC?
Well, I think Lesnar's formal retirement from the UFC was sort of closing the door.
Oh, come on. It's like WWE retirements.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I guess it's possible that he retired to formally like avoid.
Well, I heard it was a money thing,
blood testing.
Yeah, but it was also money. Lesnar asked for a bunch of money for the I think the July card, and they said no. So hopefully, maybe if the WWE stops paying him at some point, that might not happen.
I don't think the WWE is ever going to stop paying him. I mean, Vince McMahon loves him more than anything, and just loves him being the big draw. I mean, loves just, you know, beating out Dana White for the rights to Brock Lesnar. I mean, that's worth a lot of money. That's worth a lot of money to him. But you know, maybe, I mean, it's totally feasible that WWE will be forced in the not too distant future to evolve into something where he's, you know, Brock Lesnar is less valuable.
Yeah. But at some point he's too old to fight heavyweight championship in the UFC.
Yeah, and he'll never be too old to fight in WWE. They'll just keep trotting him out there.
I've noticed the entire history of wrestling, no one's ever too old.
Yeah, it's
one more for you. So it seemed to me one of the distinct characteristics in watching the show was the lack of, I don't want to say fun characters, but it just seemed like everything was extremely serious and almost paint by numbers a little bit. And I know that this episode was actually, I looked at some of the Reddit threads after and people liked it more than previous ones, but it just, is there someone that I saw on Monday or who exists on the roster where they could have a path forward as far as just being sort of a wild card and making things a little more fun? I mean, I just think, you know, even like the run-in, there was a run-in, as I said, during the Brian Rollins fight where everybody was just, there were like 20 people in, but it was all like the main carders. And I just feel like in another era of WWE, like the Lucha House Party guys, right? Like they came in during commercial break and just threw candy in the crowd and then they disappeared the entire night. And I feel like 10, 15 years ago, Lucha House Party would have just run out into the run-in and it would have just been a 10-second laugh thing and we would have gone back. And I just feel like there's a lack of spontaneity, which has defined a lot of eras of wrestling and made things a little more fun. I just feel like there was a distinct lack of spontaneity when I was watching that.
It's funny that you mentioned that because they've just introduced this, reintroduced. It used to be kind of the hardcore title. Now it's called the 24/7 title.
I saw that.
And there, yeah, I think it was on, it had a less of a presence on Monday, if I remember correctly, than it has on all the other shows of late. But R-Truth is your champion or was your champion at that point. And generally, like once or twice during the show, they'll just like have a mob of people comically run out and chase him around. Because he can get pinned at any moment in time, so everyone's on the hunt for the champion, and just trying to grab them and pin them and have a referee come out of nowhere and do that. I mean, I think in the Attitude Era, there was a lot. There was a fair bit of comedy. Right. I mean, obviously, you have people like The Godfather or Val Venus or whatever that were just
Al Snow, where it's just like
Snow's a great example. You also had a lot of comedy though that was coming from the top of the card, right? I mean, DX was doing shtick when they weren't in fisticuffs, and sometimes when they were, and Mick Foley was funny. The Rock certainly was a comic performer, and yeah, I mean, the top of the card for sure is much more serious. I mean, there's I'm trying to think of the right word, not exactly levity, but there is a certain like joy, inherent joy in some of the people that kind of open. I mean, like Ricochet, that first match of the show. Ricochet, Cesaro for sure, even The Miz. I mean, these are people who can be upbeat, who have like humorous or upbeat aspects to their personas. The New Day as well, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Yeah. So I mean, they're hilarious dudes, and I think they had a little bit more on the next night on SmackDown. They kind of spread their wings and had a little talk show, and they've done some. I mean, they're very very funny people, but. But yeah, it's a fine line to walk, and I think that WWE is in a really precarious place right now because they don't always execute the comedy super well, but they're doing more in that direction. But you know, they have competition suddenly from this new company AEW,
yeah, of course.
And they kind of are finding ways in to territory that WWE is not occupying right now, and comedy is going to be one of them. They can somehow also be more serious than WWE at the same time, just like in the next match. So WWE is going to have a real struggle with their own monotony and getting out of that. I think you're touching on
that. Yeah,
right,
I just
point.
Feel like they've overthought it, and I just like what are you supposed to find fun about the Becky Lacey fight? It was just a kind of a normal fight. Nothing happened that was interesting. And I think that the unpredictability of not just the Attitude Era, but the eras after that is totally lacking right now.
Yeah, well, you did get to see Bray Wyatt's Firefly Funhouse, at least on the big screen, right?
I did. There was quite a reaction to that. I didn't know what that was, but I could understand kind of what was going on there.
I think you probably got it. It started off as him appearing for the first time in months as just like weird Mr. Rogers, and then the shows got progressively creepy and dark, and now he's just clearly trying to brainwash all the children the fake children who are his audience. So yeah, there's certainly some opportunity for a little bit of I don't know if fun is the right term there, but people are very very into that. So yeah, I mean there are definitely opportunities with WWE right now. And I'm glad you went to the show.
Can I throw something at you?
Please.
So when I got back, I got into a rabbit hole of old wrestling videos. And as these tend to do, I got into like ECW videos a little more. And thank you, Jim. And so the crowd in Staples Center was quite paltry. The upper deck was completely roped off, and then not the lower bowl was not that filled. I understand WWE is a public company. I understand that they want to maximize revenue. Is there any case for the WWE to start going to smaller venues to build up the intimacy and make it really cool and a little more fun, and then kind of go back to those bigger things because they can't get the crowds maybe that they used to?
Here's the thing. WWE is too, I mean, the live event revenue, if a hedge fund bought WWE, you know, if Bain Capital bought WWE and decided to strip it down to its bones and sell it off, they would get rid of the touring show. I mean, I'm no financial expert.
They would just be at Barclays Center every week.
Yep. Yeah, or they would just build their own arena somewhere, you know, and they would do it like that. But yeah, I think that's right, because they don't make proportionally, they don't make enough money, especially when you look at the wrestler contracts and stuff like that. Like if there were a way to do it on a reduced, you know, with a reduced budget and reduced payroll and everything else, I think they would definitely look into that. But it's still a shit ton of money, you know, that they make, and I think that every time they run an interesting venue, a non basketball arena venue, it's a better show. It's a better product. It just feels more fun and more interesting. But It's just a really steady income stream, and it's just the way things are done, and they've been done for a long time. And, you know, they get, I think, relatively favorable booking rates at all these arenas. So if they went to, like, you know, another place that was two thirds the size, they might not be, they might be paying more to get in there, but they get a, you know, a discounted rate because they're there all the time. And yeah, I mean, it's just the way things are done. But philosophically, I'm 100% behind your suggestion. I would much rather see WWE at, like, an interesting small venue. I mean, even at Staples Center, when you go to go, when they're not, when the cameras aren't there, when you go to, like, a house show, when they're passing through town, they, you know, blanket off, or they, you know, they cover off the upper deck, and everybody's down on the lower bowl, and the lights are dimmed, and it's just a, it's such, it's so much more of a fun mm-hmm. environment. But yeah, there is a sameness to the presentation when you're there as well.
I think I'd be an awesome wrestling writer. It's the only thing. I'm not one of these guys. Like, I would be a terrible NFL GM. I think mm-hmm. I think that I would have had a calling.
Oh, you mean you to work for WWE?
I think I could fix them in like 3 weeks.
I have some email addresses.
In a perfect world, I'm talking about, like, if Vince didn't exist. You know what I'm saying? Well, you're talking about, like, the Bain Capital thing. Like, I just bought WWE. How am I going to fix this? I think there's really easy ways to do it. You couldn't do it as currently constructed. It's a public company controlled by one family.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult.
For the record, I don't want to work for WWE.
Well, it's too bad because they just hired you. I just got a text message back.
I'm very happy as a ringer writer.
You've been traded to Triple H and Bill, or who are in constant communication. Just finalized the trade.
Hey, when I was doing my meeting to go to the Wall Street Journal, which was my first job out of college, I was actually still in college. I was talking to the guy who was about to hire me, and I have no idea why this happened. At the next table over at the Wall Street Journal, the next, like, coffee table over, was just Triple H, who was just sitting there the whole time. He was wearing a suit. He had the belt. It was 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have no explanation as to why Triple H was in the waiting room there.
I don't think you need to know. There's nothing weirder than a pro wrestler.
I beat him out for the job is what happened.
Yeah, he was trying to be a football beat, right? Or no, just a sports generalist at that point. Yeah, he could have been great. Triple H has a great mind for what makes things work. The next time you go to a show, you got to let me drag you to an NXT show, because that's where that feels like a different thing, and it's the coolest live event vibe that WWE pulls off.
Is that second all the stuff in Orlando? Yeah,
that's what they have in Orlando, but they also tour. And whenever they have big shows, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, WrestleMania, they do an NXT show like the night before. And it's really fun, and it feels very different.
All right, well, we'll go. You and me, buddy.
All right, let's do this. Thank you so much for coming on. Last question. If you could relive one match from the past week of your life, would it be Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan? Or would it be Flyer and Volador Jr. versus Foligno and Negro Casas?
Well, so there's a couple of things. Number one, I was with my friend Matt and up for Raw, and I was with my wife at Arena Mexico. And I all due respect to Matt, I like my wife more. But I
that's good.
I think that I would like to be at the Arena Mexico. It's also like there's murals of wrestlers on the walls there. Like, it's a temple to wrestling. It's just really, if you like wrestling, you'd be in heaven there, you know? Like, if there was like a, okay. I don't know, like I love a handful of sports, but if there was something like that for the sports that I really like, I would travel to go there.
You heard it here. I'm gonna have to go now. I'm gonna finish this podcast and book a ticket.
Dude, every Friday night. It also costs like $6.
Well, then I'm definitely in. Anyway, thank you so much for doing this.
They only have one beer.
Jim is screaming at me.
It's fine.
We got to get out of here.
All right.
Thank you so much for doing this, man. Right. I will go to a bunch more shows, and we'll have you on again.
All right.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks again to Andrew. Thank you all for listening to this. We got to get out of here. And thanks to my heel producer, Jim. Apologies, as always, to John Moxley. We'll see you back here next week, humanoids.
We are desperately out of time. The tape machines are rolling. We'll see you next week on the Masked Man Show.